I mean, I'm 36. I'm divorced. I have a job I hate. I just want to do something big, you know? Make my mark.
So what are you going to do?
I'm working on something. My dad doesn't get it. He's had the same boring job for 40 years. That's what people do, he says.
Well, he's right. Most people just stay on the beaten path, then one day they wake up and realize they didn't do everything they wanted to do. Look at me. I was so afraid to retire, I had to do it twice before I finally got out here.
Why'd you wait so long?
Because I'm an idiot.
Okay, I gotta tell you. I'm doing a big year.
Wow.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Retro Movie Podcast, a podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my friend and co-host and the person least likely to go see a bird instead of being with his wife, Alex Perkins. Perk, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, and your dad's wrong. I'll always choose a bird over a people.
Yeah, the snowy owl's got its grip on you?
Mm-hmm.
I will say, going into... Well, I knew this was a bird-watching movie, and I'm like, that's fine. In real life, though, I hate birds. They're creepy.
Oh.
I subscribe to the theory that all birds are robots. Birds aren't real. And they have to look... They turn their head to the side to look at you. I'm not about that. I don't like it. I don't care if biology makes it make sense. It creeps me out. But thankfully, we didn't have to deal with that in this movie. So yeah, welcome back to the podcast, everyone. As always, you can find our show most Fridays on podcast services. If you like it, tell your friends and share the podcast, and maybe they'll like it as well. Every week, we review a movie that is connected to the previous one we watched. Last year, we watched Demolition Man, and Perk, the sneaky bastard, found Jack Black hiding as an extra and used him as our connection this week to the big year. So Perk, why don't you intro the movie for us?
Yeah, all right. So The Big Year is a 2011 joint directed by David Frankel, I believe. Yep. Starring Owen Wilson, Jack Black, and Steve Martin in quite the 1-2-3 combo. And it is a movie about bird watching and about how annually there's a competition to see in one calendar year how many birds, different species of birds you can see to set like a record. Mm-hmm. And it follows around the chase of three guys who are doing this year long pilgrimage to bird place.
There you go.
Yeah.
And Berg, how do you know? Here's the thing. I want a trivia on this movie because I'm like, how realistic is this? You know, what's the real deal? And there's not a lot of trivia on IMDb, so I'm curious if you dug up anything else that's interesting.
No, I don't have much. I actually forgot to altogether. But yeah, just a couple things on IMDb. As of 2019, the big year record is 836.
Wild.
Which in this movie they were
like 740,
around the 730 range, 740. Yeah, yeah, so. And the average cost is estimated to be between $30,000 and $40,000.
Yeah,
which I would actually estimate higher.
I would estimate higher as well. Yeah,
how much these guys are traveling around?
The beginning of the movie's like, I got five, I need five more. I'm like, there's no way you could survive for a year and travel this much on $10,000. That is, this is not realistic at all.
Yeah, you're definitely scraping together pennies at that point.
Yeah. All right, so this is my first time watching it. Perk, you've seen it before, so I'll go first. So I think what's interesting about this movie, so before I watched it, I watched the trailer on IMDb just because I'm like, yeah, what's this movie about?
Don't do that.
Well, I'm glad I did because, Perk, you'll be surprised to know that in the trailer, there is zero mention of bird watching. They cut a trailer that just had none of the bird shit. I think the studio was afraid that people wouldn't go see a bird watching movie.
Oh, it's one of those, yeah.
So they cut it as like these three guys are each having like a midlife crisis and, you know, Jack Black doesn't know what he's doing with his life, and Steve Martin doesn't know if he wants to retire. It's basically all the B plot. They're like, that's the A plot. And
so
I think...
real to jump in real quick, like, I think that's something that's super interesting that movie studios do is they, in the trailer, they portray like an almost entirely different movie.
Yep.
Because, you know, they think that the premise is too out there and no one will want to watch it. Whereas, like, in the case of this, like... the selling point is the birding. Mm-hmm. I feel like just seeing a trailer for a movie about guys having midlife crises, that doesn't, I don't want to watch that movie at all.
Definitely like, not. Yeah, no, I watched the trailer. Yeah. I'm like, I thought Perks was about birding, and this doesn't. This seems kind of like a boring movie. And I think it bit him in the ass. I'm looking at the box office data right now. Budget was about $41 million. The gross worldwide is just over $8 million. So this was a massive flop, unfortunately. But not to say it's a bad movie, because I really like this movie. It's very, very charming, very feel good and fun. There's not a lot to not like, you know? You're just having a good time watching these three characters doing this competition and birding, and they each have their own, I guess, a kind of B-plot of issues they're going on with their life that I think all work pretty well. The only one I didn't like, the only part of it I didn't like was Joel McHale and his, like, buddy in Steve Martin's side story. They're just like, ah, those damn birds. Like, every single time we see them, it's like, all right, guys, just
true.
Get over it. But
they do not have much to do, that's fair.
Yeah. But overall, I think the standout for me was a lot of the writing. I feel like it felt like a lot of the dialogue was very realistic, and a lot of the plot progression was more realistic as opposed to more Hollywood. The best example, I think, being, like, Owen Wilson's side story with his wife, where, like, they all but confirm that she's going to cheat on him with the contractor guy. She doesn't. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that's probably more realistic. We just expect that to happen because it's a movie. So I think right. There's a lot of stuff like that where they went the more realism route, and I really appreciated that. So, yeah, overall, really enjoyed it and had a good time.
Yeah, so I mentioned last week, this is just, like, one of the most pleasant movies to watch because mm-hmm. the stakes are just so incredibly low, which is not a bad thing. Like, there are stakes and there's still tension and everything, but it, like, at a base level, it doesn't hurt to watch. Like, it's not, like, a stressful movie because it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, they're just running around watching birds. And, like, the biggest major character conflict is when Brad tells Stu that he's doing a big year and Stu doesn't tell him back. Mm-hmm. And that's resolved within, like, 10 minutes, and then we go yep. back to fun bird watching.
Yep.
And it's just, like, one of those movies where everything just kind of, you know, and I gotta be consistent, right? At the end, when the plucky underdog falls way short, it happens all the time, but I don't know, it was okay.
I like it in this one because Owen Wilson had to give up something in order to do it. Like, yeah, he
there's a tangible loss.
Yeah, like, he gave up something so he could have it, as opposed to Jack Black and Steve Martin, where they're just trying really hard, and they actually gain more in their personal lives. So I liked how it ended up with Jack not getting the number one slot there. But I think it's like, yeah, this is good.
It's just, it's like, hey, why don't we put together all the most likable actors in Hollywood and mm-hmm. Joel McHale and make a movie? And it's like, yeah, you're kind of just rooting for everybody. Even Owen Wilson, he's kind of a dick, but he's like, well, you know, wow.
I will say, he does play a very good asshole in this movie. Like, he puts on the charm, but he's just a dick and doing all this underhanded shit. But he never cheats, which I'm glad they confirmed that
that one scene. No, that was really just kind of like another, like, feel-good fist pump type mm-hmm. scene. It's like, unprompted, he's just, like, not cheating because he knows it's not cool. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Another highlight of this movie, I think, is just kind of the rotating cast of characters that come in and out of the movie. They never spend too much time on anyone except for, I guess, Rashida Jones a little bit. But I appreciate that. It's like, yeah, like, it would make sense, like, the same kind of group of people is going around doing this. And
occasionally you bump into people, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I saw the guy, you know, beginning of the movie. Now he's at the end of the movie in this random scene. I like that. It felt like the world felt more lived in and more, like, realistic. Just because the people there, you know, it made sense. So I like that as well.
No, and there's, like, some cheap stuff that's just good for a laugh. Like, the guy who brings his wife to honeymoon on Attu.
God.
It's like, yeah, we all know where this is going to go, but it's, like, fine because it's funny.
And Owen Wilson's like, going to be unforgettable. How'd you feel about the CG in this movie?
It was a little bit noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. The fact that I noticed it is kind of tough. But, you know, I of course was thinking, like, this is I mean, it's got to be an impossible, like, feat to pull off getting footage of these birds. So, something they had to do, I guess. And it's, unfortunately, it was a little bit noticeable.
Yeah, the two shots of, like, close-ups on the CG birds, I was like, eh. But, I mean, it's not that bad. There's not that many of it. The only, like, egregious shot, in my opinion, was when Steve Martin was on the phone with his wife. And she's like, oh, I'm in Paris. And you look up the window, and it's not even, like, a green screen. It's just, like, a painting of Paris out the window. I'm like, you are not in Paris. You are in a hotel that's, like, makes you think you're in Paris. There is no... It was the most, like, flat background I've ever seen. So that was the only, like, terrible, like, effect shot, I thought. But yeah, the two bird CG birds, I'm like, that's very noticeable. But overall, I think the footage they got of the birds was really solid. I imagine it was a lot of real footage. So it works, I think, well for
either
the
movie.
Either
it was a lot of real footage or it was well covered up for the most part. But yeah.
If it was like maybe in the small in the distance, that I didn't notice that was like CG.
No, but like when it was the main focus, like when it goes to see the hummingbird, like you can really tell that it's animated.
Yep.
And that could just be a limitation of it being, you know, 12 years old or whatever, like this movie's pretty inoffensive and not really outstanding at anything. Like the score, it's more of a soundtrack, and it's fine. Like they pick a lot of like good tunes that
I didn't need Viva La Vida. That was a little bit too like mainstream. Well, I'm like, oh, it's Viva La Vida.
That was a little nostalgia-y for me because I loved that song when it came out, so it was like, oh my god, is this when this movie's from? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I tend to lean away from the like bought soundtracks more towards the actual like score. But you know, for a movie as light as this, it, you know, some pop music in the background is inoffensive, and
yeah, it works.
Like none of the direction was like groundbreaking or anything, and all the acting was good, but it's like Jack Black playing Jack Black. Steve Martin playing Steve Martin.
Yep.
Owen Wilson playing an asshole. So,
yep.
Like, yeah, there's not really any reaching in this movie. It knows its place, and it just kind of vibes there, which works for me.
Yeah. I will say, I think a lot of the landscape shots were good. It seems like they were on location for a lot of stuff, or it felt like they were anyway. And I think they did a good job of showcasing kind of nature and the different places they were, because it is like kind of a globe-trotting movie, so... like that. And I also thought that like the pacing was pretty solid. Like it moves along, you go in through the year at a pretty good pace, and I like how each person is kind of like, you know, in the bird zone, and then they get pulled back to real life for a minute, and then they get back, and like that doesn't all happen at the same time. It kind of is staggered for all the different characters. And
most of the B plots I enjoy, like the stuff with Jack Black and his dad, I thought was nice, and them finding the owl was a really sweet scene, and all of Stu and his kid and
grandson,
grandkid,
yeah,
all of that is great. I agree that the like office job stuff is pretty lame, and then it's interesting to see the Owen Wilson's B plot. Like, you see him running up to the door at the hospital and then turning around. It's like, oh.
Just like, no, bro. I thought he was going to turn a new leaf there. I thought, oh, for sure he's going to do it. And then the snowy owl, I'm like, God fucking damn it, he's going to leave. And yeah, that was probably like the most, I mean, negatively
something,
I felt at the time.
Lesson to be learned. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, like we said, he does sacrifice something to get the prize. So I end up being okay with it. And yeah, I liked how they showed him kind of alone on Christmas Eve, and yeah, like all the character stuff I think is very solid. Like I said, except for the office thing with Stu. But
And one artistic choice that I really liked is, well, we see the snowy owl when that lackey guy from Buster Scruggs, when he sees it, we see it, but when Owen Wilson sees it, it's just an off-screen camera flash.
Yep.
And it's like we see like Christmas Eve off-screen camera flash, snowy owl cross, like
just walks
and
out,
it's just
yeah.
like yeah, it just kind of it drives home the point that it's like, wow, is this really worth it? And I think that was a really cool choice by the director.
Yeah, yeah, it shows that he's not even doing it for the love of birding; he's just doing it to win.
And yeah, it's all about checking off the list. Yep.
Yeah. And then you even have, like, Rashida Jones' character, who, again, doesn't have a ton of screen time, but, like, she mentions her, she has a life list of, like, over 500, and, you know, she's not even trying for a big year. She just likes it that much.
Right.
So I liked having a little bit of contrast as well. But, yeah, I don't have too much more to say about this movie. It's just, yeah, it's feel good, looks good, learn about some birds. It's a good time. I like the credits. We get to see all of the ones that Owen Wilson's character saw.
Oh, yeah.
The big year. That was cool. Just like seeing all of them. But.
Yeah, definitely fun.
Yeah. What is your recommendation based on this movie?
So I got to forget, or I'm forgetting what it's called. So you go and I'll figure it out.
Well, I don't want to spoil it, but my recommendation is the movie we're watching next week. So I'm going to save it until
you
reveal that. And I'm sorry, okay. I'm putting you on the spot now.
I will try and be quicker.
I can maybe help you out. What's the plot or the characters?
No shot.
No shot?
Oh, it's called, all right, it's called Well Groomed.
Well Groomed, and it was, okay.
Yeah, so it's a documentary that I saw at a film festival in, like, rural western Wisconsin. And it's about people who do creative grooming. So, like, people who take poodles and turn them into, like, works of art, essentially. And, you know, like, look it up.
I'm looking at it right now. It looks crazy.
Yeah. And that is, so my connection is, you know, this movie is about something that I have no connection, no background with, birding.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice. It's like a cool little sneak peek into a world that I've never been introduced to. So I like stuff like that. So Well Groomed is about creative dog grooming, which is literally walking into the cinema. I had no idea it was even a thing. So
yeah,
it's actually a pretty good movie, like documentary, and it's got a fantastic score. I don't know if it's streaming literally anywhere. Probably it's on not.
HBO Max.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
No way. I'll have to give it another peep. But yeah, that movie's another one where it's like you just watch it and you're like, really? This is a thing?
That's awesome.
So that's what I got for you. Yeah, watch Well Groomed on HBO.
I like it. One other thing I forgot to mention is in this movie, I really liked how supportive Jack Black's boss was, Anthony Anderson. He's like,
yeah,
I'll pay you extra.
Who was also in this movie for some reason.
Dude, everybody's in this movie. Like, the amount of cameos are absolutely insane.
Straight up, yeah, like Angelica Houston's in there.
And yep. Yeah, he's the guy from Buster Scruggs and just like, yeah, a bunch of random people. But yeah, let's get into our bonus reviews. I got three, you got two, so I'll go first here. Just quick one to start. Top Gun Maverick's coming out this weekend, so I had to rewatch Top Gun, one of my favorite 80s movies. I will say on this rewatch, didn't love it as much as I have in the past. I think it's because it's, I don't know, it's paced a little bit weird. I think the action still holds up. Like, what they're able to do it for the time is, like, really, really impressive. Doing, like, some miniature shots and then actually getting, you know, footage of fighter jets, stuff like that. And it is a bit propaganda-y. That was kind of the point of it, which is, you know, problematic for its own reasons. But overall, soundtrack, absolutely legendary. They just keep playing Danger Zone and, what's the love ballad? I already forgot the love ballad they wrote for it. Just over and over and over and over and over again. Yep. And I can't get mad because they're banger songs. And Tom Cruise, this is kind of his breakout role as an action star. I think he's great. The whole cast, I mean, Goose, Iceman. It's all fantastic to watch. And yeah, it's just a fun time. If you haven't seen Top Gun, I really highly recommend watching it before going to see Maverick if you're interested in that. Cause apparently, it's super good. So
yeah, I've heard only good things. I didn't realize it's all the, like, at least all of the shots where they're in the cockpit are practical.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Cruise bonkers. Learned how to fly fighter jets. I mean, Tom Cruise is an absolute madman when it comes to stunts, which I appreciate. It makes better movies.
Yeah, and then I'm interested to see how they get, because Val Kilmer's going to be in it.
I think it's just a picture of him is in it. It's in the trailer.
He's not actually in it?
I don't think so.
Okay, because, yeah, he's in a bit of a state.
Yeah, no. When if you watch the trailer, they're like, "Yeah, Iceman recommended you," and just a picture of Val Kilmer, older. Oh, okay. So I imagine that'll be it.
Okay.
But you know,
I think he, you know, eats through a tube now and everything. He had horrible esophageal cancer. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's probably not in acting shape, I would imagine.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm curious to see what the plot is, because looking at the trailer, there's a volleyball scene. There's, you know, the new kids coming. Like, they could, there's like Goose's son. Is like, they could do the same movie again, but it seems like they've elevated it quite a bit. So I'm really excited to watch it. But, yeah, check out Top Gun. It's still on Netflix till the end of the month. But the funniest thing on the rewatch was there's a sex scene, and the amount of tongue used is just fucking hilarious. Like, it's Tom Cruise and the love interest, Kelly McGinnis. They're like in silhouette. You know how they used to do in old movies for sex scenes? And just the silhouette of tongues going back and forth. I'm like, this is incredible. So fantastic. Yeah, give it a watch. Burke, what do you want to talk about first?
All right, so I finally finished up The After Party on Apple TV Plus, which I started when it was releasing weekly and then just forgot to finish it and went back, wrapped it up. It is very, very good. Would absolutely remember, would absolutely recommend watching this one if you have Apple TV Plus, Jacob.
Big sad.
But yeah, so basically the premise is it's a murder mystery that takes place after a high school reunion. And each episode in the series focuses on a different character, and it goes through them and their interview and their story. And it, you know, you kind of connect the dots as you go, and each of the episodes is like a whole different genre, right? Mm-hmm. So, there's one episode that's like almost like a horror thriller type. It's really tame, but it's like more like that. And that comes right after an episode that's, like musical, which is Ben Schwartz episode, which is just great because he is amazing. And then, yeah, towards the end, like I didn't know, you know, I was surprised with the outcome. Like I had considered it, but I, you know, I wasn't sold because they leave it up in the air well enough. And yeah, just like the whole show is really great. Oh, and there's a lot of really clever stuff in there. Like there's a character that no one remembers. Like he's just like the faceless guy, but he's been there the whole time and he was there in high school. So every episode is named, after the character who's like the main character. Mm-hmm. And then one episode is randomly named like the high school party. And it's about him because nobody remembers his name. Yeah, so it's very cleverly written. I think it might be, you know, at face value doesn't look like the best thing ever, but it's really clever and would recommend for sure.
Hell yeah, I like it. My next movie is also on Netflix right now, and that is I rewatched Blade Runner 2049, my first time watching it since it came out in the theaters, I believe. I loved it at the time. I love Denis Villeneuve, as we're both fans of on this podcast. But goddamn, it's a good fucking movie. Like, I was extra paying attention to this time. If someone who hadn't seen the original watched it, would they still enjoy it? And I think they definitely would. You'd get more out of it if you've seen the original. But this is it's not a standalone movie. It is just incredible. Like, the shots, the acting, the score, like, everything is just, like, people throw on the term perfect movie every once in a while, and I'm kind of hesitant to use it. I think it's a perfect movie. Like, truly.
Damn.
It is. It's everything. Like, and the story is so good, and kind of the mystery, and then how that progresses. Yeah, it's, and how they, like, the way they use technology in the future, and it's just fucking incredible. I absolutely love it. Ryan Gosling, I think, is so good in the lead role. Anna de Armas is fantastic. Harrison Ford. Is Harrison Ford. Like, he's fine. Thankfully, he's not in it a ton. As he's gotten older, I feel like his acting chops have greatly diminished, but he's, like, good enough. Robin Wright is so good. Like, man. Fucking incredible movie. Please watch it. Both Blade Runners are on Netflix right now if you haven't seen them.
Jared Leto's in it.
And he plays the creep, which is, up his alley.
And then his storyline just kind of doesn't close, but whatever.
Yeah, we don't care about him. But yeah, I love it. Please, please watch it, people. Perk, what's your next one?
All right, so another in the trend of stuff Jacob can't watch.
Mm-hmm.
Severance on Apple TV Plus. It's a series about the premise is that there's a surgical procedure you can go through to get a chip put into your brain that separates your brain into you at work and you at home. So when every morning when you drive into work, you drop off your things, you get in an elevator, door shuts, door opens, you get out of the elevator, you go home. And then parallel, every day your work self walks out of an elevator, does their work for 8 hours a day, gets back in the elevator, elevator closes, elevator opens, they get back out and go back to work. Mm-hmm. So, which sounds a little sinister and turns out is a little sinister. So, it's really, really good. Very clever. I think it draws a lot from a super creative premise.
Mm-hmm.
And then has some stumbles along the way, but for the most part, is super enthralling. Like I couldn't look away. I stayed up way too late watching it. So definitely binge worthy. And then it has some great reveals in the last couple episodes. Some really big, cool, like, oh wow, no way type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of was a little iffy on the actual finale, because there's two character arcs. Excuse me. There are three character arcs in the final in the finale, like three ongoing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like an A, B, and C plot, but they're all kind of equal.
Right.
And the A and the B are really fantastic and super enthralling. Although the one is just kind of a like keeps pulling the bait away from you right before you're about to hit it,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of annoying. But then the C plot, I don't care about. The stakes are impossibly low for that one, so it's hard to really be like every time it cut to that story, it's like, oh, all right,
mm-hmm.
like for not sure. Fast forward, but probably,
yeah.
And yeah, so it very clearly sets up for a second season, which I'll be looking forward to. I'm concerned because I feel like these all, like, I'm gonna coin this term, light sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
You know, like light fantasy or heavy fantasy. I think that's the terminology, right?
Are you thinking of like higher fantasy?
No, low fantasy. Yeah. So low sci-fi. So yeah. This is like a low sci-fi, which I think is cool, but a lot of times these shows kind of blow it and like put all their cards on the table in the first season, and
right.
coming back in the second season, it's not as interesting. Like for example, I think two or three times I've started Westworld season two, and I've never gotten all the way through it just because I just fall off of it. Whereas Westworld season one is one of the greatest seasons of television I've ever seen.
Sure.
It's top to bottom fantastic.
Yeah.
But then, of course, like, you know, they blow a whole lot open, drop a whole bunch of huge things before the finale, and then it's like, okay, next season, I guess. Like, there's clearly threads that go through, but it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, but, like, a lot of the cool stuff you've already told me, so.
Yeah. It's so funny to be, like, ending seasons and ending series, it seems like some of the hardest stuff to do in Hollywood or anywhere. And I feel like it's because they don't plan things out.
More.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't plan out what the ending's going to be. So I hope that happens more, where people figure out how they want their show to end before they start it. But
look at, like, Lost. Lost was supposed to, I think, end after four seasons, and they gave it like seven just because they kept renewing it because they wanted more money.
Yep. No, and that's why I like shows like One Piece and Attack on Titan, because the creators know what the ending is, so they can do a lot more with like foreshadowing and pacing, and everything thematically will make more sense. But yeah, the world revolves around money, so we have stuff like Lost where they'll just keep pumping it out if it's making them money, so... Hopefully, exactly. After Party and Severance, I'm assuming they're both doing second seasons, will keep up the sauce.
Yeah, so with After Party, you know, I think that...
That one makes a lot more
second
sense.
Second season, it doesn't have to be bad, because I'm sure it's going to have to be a whole new cast of characters.
Yeah.
If it isn't a whole new cast of characters, that would be kind of lame.
Yeah, I imagine it would be.
Yeah, because a lot of the characters like had their arcs pretty well tied up in a bow. So, but yeah, I hope they do something similar where like, because in the After Party season one, it's a whole bunch of like smaller comedians that have been side roles in other people's shows, and they all just like get a little moment to shine, and it's super nice.
Yeah. All right, my final movie I want to talk about is a movie I had not seen before, and that is Wind River.
Oh, you watched Wind River?
Mm-hmm.
Just on a whim?
I watched it with my parents on Sunday night before I flew back.
How did you settle on Wind River?
My parents wanted to watch it. I'm like, okay.
Oh, man. All right.
So I'm assuming you've seen
it. Go on. I have.
Okay. Here's the thing, this movie. It's a good movie. And I think it's a little bit overrated. I know people love this movie. I think it's a good movie. It felt a little bit weird to watch because I'll get into some spoilers. It's like the premise of the movie is, you know, a woman is raped and killed in a Native American reservation. And Jeremy Renner is a local fish and wildlife guy who hunts down predators. And he gets brought into the investigation to help solve the murder and stuff. This whole idea of like this white guy coming in and solving the problem for all these Native Americans just feels a little bit icky to me. Feels a little bit white savior-y. Overall, I think they handle the Native American population very well, and I think that they show accurately how shitty it is for Native Americans in this country, which I do really appreciate. But at the end of the day, it's a white guy and a white woman coming in and solving all the problems, and it's just like, okay. And it's, you know, directed and written by a white guy. So it's like, I appreciate your effort here. I think you did as good as you could. And I'm sure there was some studio involvement that this movie wouldn't have gotten made if Jeremy Renner didn't helm it. But
it's one of, it probably is one of those, yep.
Yeah. Because the director is the guy who wrote Hell or High Water. And he's a very talented person.
It's Taylor Sheridan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's fantastic.
Yeah, so. He's really good. It's just this story I wish had been led by a Native American. Sure. I think it would have hit better, but
yeah. And this is something I watched it years and years ago, so I was probably less aware of, you know, that, you know, white savior complex, obviously. So I'd be interested to watch it back, but you didn't say so, but I plan to never watch this movie again.
I mean, it's definitely rough.
It's just brutal and cold.
Yeah.
And hard, and yeah, it's a tough watch.
And I do appreciate that they pay good respect to the woman that dies in it. Like, she's not just a plot device,
right?
So I appreciate that. I think the quote unquote bad guy, I think, is dealt with in a very satisfying way. But one thing that was a little bit annoying is that this is kind of like a mystery, like a murder mystery, and you, as the audience member, have no way of figuring it out before the characters do. You know, like you which is like, it's fine. I mean, there are certain movies like that, but it would be nice to have a little bit more guess potential, but you just can't, like, you don't meet the character until you see what happened. But I think it builds tension well. I think the acting is solid. It's just, the white savior thing's kind of weird.
This movie, was when because Elizabeth Olsen is fantastic in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of hope for her before she sold her soul down the Marvel well. And hopefully she, like, I don't know. I don't follow her career too well, but hopefully she does a little more, you know, serious act. Not saying, you know, obviously she's really good as Wanda, but hopefully she can kind of flex her range a little bit more in the future, because she's great.
I mean, I completely agree with you, but I also would say that I think she is phenomenal in WandaVision and Doctor Strange 2. I think she is able to flex her muscles, actually, more than you might expect in those projects. But yeah, I agree. I think she'll be back to doing more stuff like that in the near future.
But yeah, I really like Wind River. I don't know if "likes" the right word.
It's a solid movie.
I think it's very good.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. For what they were doing, I think they did a really good job. I think Taylor Sheridan did a really good job. It's just, and again, I don't think we would have gotten made if it wasn't a white actor we knew.
Unfortunately, that's generally how it works. Like that, everyone flipped out about Matt Damon in the Wall or the Great Wall, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
it's a movie that doesn't get made if he's not in it. Given, yeah. We probably would be fine without that movie. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it. I don't think I need to. But mm-hmm. there are often, like, or what was it? Got another bad one, but Ghost in the Shell, where mm-hmm. Scarlett
Johansson. That one's more egregious, I think.
Well, yeah, sure. But once again, it's like that nobody sees that if Scarlett Johansson's not the lead. It's very cynical, because Hollywood yeah. is very cynical, and consumers are really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that a movie like Parasite ever even sees the light of day is a miracle.
Right.
Like, and it has to be a marketing miracle, you know? So
yeah.
It's I understand it, how you need to have, you know, two prominent white leads. I agree with you that it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it was a good story.
Yeah.
Aside from, yeah, just a tough situation.
Right. And yeah, just the last thing I'll say to cap off this conversation. I actually was reading an article yesterday about The Last Samurai, which is another one where it's Tom Cruise and like learning how to be like, I don't remember exactly the premise. Basically, he's like the head of this, all this Asian population, and like learning to be a samurai and stuff. Kind of white savory as well. And they're interviewing.
Yeah. At least he's not playing a, you know, an Asian man.
Right.
He plays
right.
like an import.
Yeah, exactly. So
a little more excusable, I suppose.
And it came up because Ken Watanabe was getting interviewed, assuming, for Tokyo Vice, but they asked him about it, about like the white saviorness of it. And he said that he doesn't really mind it because that movie helped change the views on Asian Americans, because before that, it was a lot more bad stereotypes. Like he mentioned, like the Mickey sure. Rourke movie, I don't remember what it was called, but he played like an Asian person that was like super, like the big teeth and glasses and all that shit.
Oh yeah, it's Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, yeah. So he,
yeah, it's egregious. Look it up online if you haven't seen it. But
oh and, my so goodness. Yeah, Ken Watanabe appreciated The Last Samurai for changing the perception of Asian Americans. So like if
yeah.
Wind River helps Americans understand how badly Native Americans are treated in this country, that's good. I just wish it could have gone a little bit further.
I would say it does, but yeah. I'm not the one to ask. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Yeah. Solid movie. I would recommend people watch it still, I think. It's just, yeah, felt a little bit off, but overall, sure. Solid movie. It's on Netflix.
All right.
All right. So that concludes.
And before we close out, I thought of a little bonus.
Bonus.
A little spicy trailer review. Because I don't often catch trailers, but I did catch the trailer for She-Hulk.
Mm. And
I gotta tell you, I am I am all the way out.
Is it the CG?
The CG is terrible. Did you notice that? It looks so bad.
I'm holding out hope that yet, was it 3 or 5 months until it comes out? Yeah. I'm still gonna watch it.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. The plot line is not selling me very well either, but
sure.
Obviously it's like, I'm just a normal lawyer gal who happens to be the Hulk. And it's like, I don't know.
I think it has a lot of potential. I think, but in my mind, the trailer showed footage from only like the first two episodes, I imagine, which is just setting up the premise.
Okay.
It's going to be like 11, I think. 11 like shorter episodes. And I'm pretty sure the main average episode is going to be just her in the courtroom doing a court case. And it's going to be some goofy ass superhero she has to defend. And be a lot of comedy. Like, there's a guy named, like, Frogman that's, like, in the trailer. So it's be, like, shit like that. So I think it has the potential to be very funny.
Okay.
But, yeah, I think the CG, either they need to hide it better or put a little more time and work into it. But this is the same thing with Moon Knight. Moon Knight also had some CG issues.
Okay.
So it's probably the B team, like we talked about, you know, working on it. Right. But I'm still going to watch it. I hope I enjoy it.
I'll wait for your review with bated breath.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of trailers, there's two other trailers that dropped this week. The new full Thor Love and Thunder trailer came out. Looks fantastic. We finally got to see
Natalie Portman.
Well, we saw her before, but what the villain? Oh. Why am I blanking on his name? The guy who plays Batman. Christian Bale being the villain as Gore. And they went for more of like a practical makeup look, which I appreciate.
Okay.
So I don't think we're having any CG issues with that. I'm super excited for it, and it looks great. And then they also released a trailer for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Let's fucking go, dude.
I saw the ad come up for the trailer, and I skipped it.
So. Dude, I fucking love the Mission Impossible series. Some of the best action movies of all time.
Why is it a part one?
I think this would be the last two.
But Mission Impossible are such great, like, 2 hour long movies.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need it to be a 4 hour long movie. Hey, it pretty much already is like a 10 hour long movie because they're all contiguous. So.
Yeah. No, dude, I'm so excited. Mission Impossible movies are so fucking good.
It's gonna be banging.
I can't wait.
There's no way around it. Is this the one that Tom Cruise was gonna go to space to film?
I'm pretty sure it's gonna be the next one because there's no space shots in the trailer. I imagine that'll be in the finale.
All right.
But yeah, like the cast that they've kind of accumulated over time, I think is really fun with Simon Pegg and Vin Rames and Rebecca Ferguson, who's an absolute badass. Looks like they're adding.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that. Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg haven't been killed off.
Especially Ving Rhames. He's been around since Mission Impossible 1. Which is
crazy. Yeah, right? I'm pretty sure this is Mission Impossible, but in the first Mission Impossible movie, his whole team dies in, like, the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think they figured out the group dynamic until Mission Impossible 4, Ghost Protocol, and then they've been doing it ever since then. And I'm glad they did, because it adds more fun to see the same characters over and over again.
Sure.
And it looks like they're adding Hayley Atwell to the group this movie, which I'm super excited for.
Was there another woman involved who died in the last one?
No, Rebecca Ferguson's been around for the last couple.
I'm mixing up Rebecca Ferguson and his love interest.
Yeah, Michelle, what's her last name? I'm blanking.
Also a nice looking lady.
Yeah, she's plays his wife in the first three, and then they have to break up because of to protect you.
Yeah.
But then she actually shows up in the last couple ones and has some stuff to do, which is fun. So they're just great. I think when it's all said and done, it'll probably be the greatest action movie series of all time, without much competition. Just because Tom Cruise does all of his own stunts, he's an absolute madman. But it makes for really great movies.
No, yeah. I also look forward to that.
Well, let's reveal we're watching next week. So, like I said, this is my recommendation based on this movie. I think they're very similar. And they actually have the same composer, which is our connection. Being Theodore Shapiro.
That's so funny.
And
of all the connections in this movie, we go with the composer. I love it.
Well, what's funny is we mentioned this in Big Year. It's kind of more of a soundtrack. And it's similar in Walter Mitty. It's also more of a soundtrack. Okay. But I think the songs that he chooses are a lot more impactful, but it might just be my personal taste. So I'm curious to see your take on that.
We'll find out.
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, starring Ben Stiller, will be the movie for next week on HBO Max, one of my favorite movies of all time. So, check that out, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.